This is the Middle Chamber Books Podcast, episode number 24, for Tuesday, March 30th, 2010. The world of PR 2.0 is a world in which the internet and public relations completely converge, giving communicators powerful new ways to engage in meaningful two-way conversations with key audiences. In her book, PR 2.0, New Media, New Tools, and New Audiences, Deirdre Breckenridge describes how the web has evolved into thousands of information-sharing communities and how social networking and other tools give people powerful new ways to reach those audiences. Deirdre's our guest on the Middle Chamber Books podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lubetkin. Hello and welcome to the Middle Chamber Books podcast. I'm Steve Lubetkin, the bookseller at Middle Chamber Books. I'm your host for these podcasts, in which we talk about books, authors, and other creative artists. Our bookstore is an Amazon.com associate. We're located at middlechamberbooks.com. Deirdre Breckenridge is president and executive director of communications at Mango. She's a veteran of the PR industry and leads a creative team of PR and marketing executives who are strategizing to gain brand awareness for their clients through creative and strategic PR campaigns. She counsels senior executives at companies such as ASCO, Hershey's, JVC, Kraft, and Michael C. Fina. She's also an adjunct professor at Fairleigh Dickinson University in Madison, New Jersey, where she teaches courses on public relations and interactive marketing for the Global Business Management Program. She's the author of four Financial Times Prentice Hall business books. Her newest is Putting the Public Back in Public Relations, which she co-wrote with Brian Solis. The book that we talked about, PR 2.0, New Media, New Tools, New Audiences. And in the interests of full disclosure, I get a nice little profile beginning on page 211 of PR 2.0. She's also written the new PR Toolkit and Cyber Branding. Deirdre's an accomplished public speaker. She speaks on PR, social media, digital marketing, and brand building for a number of groups, including the Public Relations Society of America, the Public Relations Institute of Australia, the National Association of Broadcasters, Strategic Research Institute, Women's Presidents Organization, Tier 1 Research, and many other colleges and universities. She has served on the board of the New Jersey chapter of PRSA and the New Jersey Advertising Club, and we conducted the conversation using the Skype internet telephony. Deirdre, thanks for joining us on the Middle Chamber Books podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure, Steve.
It's great to talk to you finally. We've been trying to put this interview together for quite some time. Why don't we start by telling us a little bit about how you decided to write a book about PR 2.0? There are other people obviously focusing on this trend, these tools, and these new media channels. How did you get involved in it?
I actually was in a pitch meeting. We were dealing with technology companies, and at the time, I really thought that we were so ahead of the curve. We had already launched BASF's first webcast globally. We had just done a huge product launch for JVC's StreamQuarter, which was the first wireless camcorder that streamed to the internet. And I was in this meeting, and it was kind of like a hard kick in the pants when I was explaining to the CEO some of the things that we had done and were in, you know, the news groups and the users groups and the webcasts. And he said to me, "Yeah, but what about the new stuff?" And this was back in 2004. And I realized that, wow, there is a whole world of things that my agency better get up to speed. Now, at the time, I had already written a couple of books for Pearson. So I went right to my acquisitions editor and I said, "You know what? There's a lot of people out there who need to know about PR 2.0. And I would like to be the author to bring that to the market." And they were thrilled because, you know, as you can see now, it is a hot topic and so many companies and brands really need to learn how to use PR 2.0 and social media communications. So that was my experience, a little bit of luck, skill, and timing, and that led to that book.
So what are some of the things that you found out when you started getting into the research? You talked to an awful lot of people around the net, around cyberspace, and using PR 2.0 techniques. What are some of the things that surprised you about what was going on?
Well, I think one of the most surprising aspects of it, you know, a lot of people are jumping into social media and PR 2.0 and they don't have a plan or a strategy or a reason or measurement in place. And, you know, a lot of companies, of course, that I interviewed were best practice scenarios. But as you're doing other research and you're learning, it really was to say that sometimes we tend to jump in too quickly to the social media landscape, and that can be a problem for a brand. And you see it all the time because, you know, social networking and using social media tools, it's not about mass messaging and marketing. It's almost like the unmarketing. In a sense, we, in PR especially, we've sort of taken our lumps for this broadcast message that's pushed from the top down. We stick these messages in news releases, and then we push them out over the wire. And really what's happening now is that consumers don't want these messages. They don't want to be marketed to. Really what they need is a brand to connect with them openly, honestly, with transparency, and to bring them information that they need that's useful. So that's where PR 2.0 is so important, because it's a different approach. It's more a bottom-up listening approach, where if you go into these communities, you can actually listen to what your stakeholders are saying and then take all of this great information and bring it back into your company to make better products and services, and to be able to offer your customers directly information that they need.
And I have heard it over and over again at some of the events that I've been involved with as a participant, as a panelist, whatever, you know, that people are being asked by clients, I want you to do a viral video. Get me a viral video. And that's totally the opposite way of how people need to be going about this kind of work.
It's so true. And, you know, it's so funny. I just interviewed on my blog. I have two blogs. One is a PR 2.0 strategies blog, which is DeirdreBreckenridge.com. And then I have my MusicQuench.com blog. And I don't know if you've heard about Dave Carroll and the Sons of Maxwell band, but when it comes to a viral video, and Dave totally captured this, it really has to do with a passion or a cause that you're pushing. Dave, a musician in a band, had an experience with United Airlines.
Sure,
and what happened?
The famous United Breaks Guitars.
Yes, United Breaks Guitars. And here's a guy who really had an issue. He brought it to light in a video because he knew that it would resonate with consumers everywhere who's ever had this experience. But at the same time, he showcased his music talent. And it's just, it was timing. It all fell into place. Sometimes it's hard just to say, you know, go make a viral video. Sometimes that's not how it works.
If you contrast that with the effort that was made recently by FedEx, the overnight delivery service, where they created a series of videos that were supposed to be edgy and entertaining and funny, and hopefully viral. And it really didn't work because they tried to cram too much of the commercial kind of message into the videos.
Right. I think when you cram the commercial message in a video, you take away from the video. That's not going to carry. It really, you know, there's a few things that make a viral video go, and it usually is tugging on some sort of emotion or heartstring, something that you can relate to. It's for a social cause, or it's just such a passionate subject, or you know what, it teaches something new that people say, hey, I have to pass this along. It's my duty. So that's where you get your best viral videos.
The other thing that I've had exchanges with people about is the idea that social media, all of these tools, are nothing more than another channel or set of channels of communication. They're not ends in and of themselves. And I've said to groups that I've spoken to, you know, I'm looking for the day when the news story is not Oprah Winfrey Twittered yesterday. The news story is what she said and how she said it, and less than how she said it. It's the content of the message rather than the tool she used.
Yeah, I definitely think that the technology is wonderful and it will continue to advance. But this is truly about people and about how people connect and interact in their communities, which is, you know, when I look at public relations, we now almost have to be sociologists and cultural anthropologists to understand, you know, what's the right way to behave in the community. And, you know, how can you get communication across that is valuable and meaningful and useful. So yeah, it's definitely about the content and what you have to say, more so than, you know, the channel or the technology, because that will always be there and that will always get better.
One of the things that I was impressed with your book is that very, very early in the book, towards the front of the book, you immediately start encouraging people to get involved with research and measurement. And those of us who have been in the practice of public relations for a long time understand those things are important, but it often doesn't get promoted in the very beginning stages of a discussion.
Thank you. I'm glad you recognize that, because, you know, public relations is very big on measurement, the audit that shows that you've actually changed a behavior or a perception. So it is very important to our industry. And that's what I was saying before about so many companies just jumping in blindly. And all of a sudden, they're on LinkedIn, they're on Twitter, and they're on Facebook, but they have no reason to be. There's no strategy or way to measure it. There's no objectives or goals. So yes, the measurement is very important. And I didn't get into it in PR 2.0, but since that book was published, I actually wrote another book with Brian Solis called Putting the Public Back in Public Relations. And we did a whole chapter. Chapter 18 is on measurement, because the new measurement is more about conversation, participation. It could be ranking or authority. There's all different types of measurement now in the social economy, as well as leads and sales, and how communication can lead to that.
So for a company that wants to get involved, or an organization that wants to get involved with PR 2.0 and using these tools, what advice do you give them to begin that process?
Right out of the gate, whether they are just starting or they've actually put something in place, I usually work with them on a social media policy that frames out. I'm a big stickler when it comes to communication and guidelines. So just like you have email and IM in a company, you have guidelines around that communication. You know, in the blogosphere, you're dealing with public companies. You do have to have social media guidelines so your employees are on board and they understand, what value does social media bring to our company? How are we using it? Why are we using it? And what role do they play? So that's usually step number one. And then I work with them on their social media plan. What makes sense for them? I usually do this whole practice of listening in different social networks to give them a reason for being there. So it's more a point of, and that's that bottom-up listening strategy, to say there is a whole universe of social networks where you may want to communicate and try to provide value. But what you need to do first is you can go into any network, and it, believe me, it is beyond Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and use keywords and start listening for conversations that relate directly to your brand, where people might be mentioning you, where there are trending topics that would be important for you to engage in communication because you're a thought leader in the industry. And by doing this, we sort of plot this, what's called an engagement grid. And it gives the company a reason to actually be building community somewhere. And then we work with them on what are some of the tools that they can use, which could be social media releases, maybe it's a podcast series, but no matter what, it's always providing the members of the community with valuable information that they can use.
You talked about the social media press release. Why don't you go into a little bit more detail about what that is? I know that that's something that there's an awful lot of debate about.
Oh, yes. That's actually one of my favorite topics to talk about. So I'm a believer in the hybrid approach. I think that I don't expect every company to drop their traditional news releases. Not at all. I think that in many industries and many companies feel comfortable with a traditional release, and maybe they're putting it out over the wire and it's enhanced with SEO, search engine optimization, as well as multimedia. But I'm also a firm believer that if you've done your listening exercises that I just talked about before in communities, that if you use a social media release, that is a pull method. It's not the type of release that is pushed out over the wires. It is housed on a blog platform, and it has wonderful sharing capabilities. So what we do for our clients, we use a service called Pitch Engine, and that's at pitchengine.com. And they actually allow you to build free social media releases. And these look different. They don't look like a traditional news release. There's all different types of templates, but if you can picture it, it is filled with many, many resources that your customer, or maybe it is a member of the media, or it could be a partner of yours, you can share this social media release with them, and they can be watching video or listening to a podcast or bookmarking your social media release to Dig or Delicious, or they can even go in and share it on Facebook or Twitter or on FriendFeed. It really has the great ability to build community around your story. And it also has the ability to customize your story, where when you go out with a traditional release, you have one story that's sent out over the wire. And it doesn't matter if it's going to broadcast TV or newspapers or print publications. There's a few key messages and it goes out. But in your social media release, you can really customize your story and even share that with different groups. So two very, very, you know, traditional versus social media release, both have their importance, very different tools.
There's a lot of debate going on right now, Deirdre, about the value of the traditional media. There are people saying, David Meerman Scott saying, throw up your hands and forget about the traditional media, focus only on the online. Where do you come down on that?
You know, it's hard because if that was the tech industry, sure. But I don't see that happening in healthcare. I mean, I was just at the FPRA conference, the Florida Public Relations Association. I spoke there in Boca Raton, and I had several people come up to me, whether it was a government agency or a healthcare company. There are some very strict laws in Florida, and everything is of public record. So, you know, it reflects the tools that you're using. So in certain industries, I don't see how you could just not use a release that gives you fair and timely disclosure and abides by the SEC rules for public companies. So in time, maybe yes. And in different industries, maybe yes. But we're not there yet.
You talk a lot in the book about online newsrooms and making them interactive and how different companies have done that. Which were the ones that you found to be the best?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many great newsrooms. And I specifically highlighted in the book, I remember, because it was Tech Group International that works with a lot of companies on enhancing their newsrooms. And now they even have social media capabilities in their newsrooms so that you can share releases on all the different networks. But I remember that Ford was very good. They had a great newsroom. AOL was a great newsroom. I think Accenture has a good newsroom.
So what is it that makes these good newsrooms? What are the characteristics? What are some of the tools that they give people?
They definitely give the ability to find more, see more, and you get, in my personal opinion, it's almost like you're getting the person, the people behind the brand. There's a lot of video. There's a lot of podcasting where you can actually, you feel it's more human. These newsrooms also allow you to save things to your briefcase, forward things and share them with other parties. So it's all either multimedia, the interactivity, or the new social media sharing tools that make them so great. And it really, it helps a member of the media if you think about it. So you have a journalist who's on deadline. If you can go into a newsroom that's going to help you with resources to build your story and to guide you and to find whether it's background history on that company, more searches, more interviews that you can listen to build a greater story, then that definitely helps.
What's the future for social media and PR 2.0?
Well, I think it has a great future. I just personally want to mention that for public relations professionals, it really is what we do with it and our, you know, anyone in communications, it's our attitude. It's how flexible we are with change because we have to try these things. We have to be out there using the technology, interacting in the social network, understanding the ramifications of a social media policy because we want to be able to take the best of this back to our own organization so that we can be the PR 2.0 agencies of the future, as well as to help our brands. And I also think that for brands to focus more internally within your organization and to understand that your employees are your brand ambassadors. They are your front line and they're there to speak the best of the company. So if you can get them on board and understanding their role in social media, and you know, I've worked with companies to develop internal social media platforms to get their employees understanding and up to speed, it actually makes a stronger outreach program when everybody knows how to use the tools and can use them effectively on behalf of the company.
And it brings to mind the other question, which is companies that have social media policies go from the extreme of no blogging, no social media, blocked out of the company, to the other extreme, which is, you know, what you see in technology companies sometimes, which is encouraging everyone to be
yes.
blogging and doing these things.
It runs the gamut. And some of the companies, though, I've actually seen, I think it was Tesla Motors. They have an accreditation process where you actually go through a course. And when you reach a certain number of credits, you are then qualified to be an official representative. So, you know, depending on the company, depending on your industry, that's going to determine how much or how little. But I think we've seen great progress with a lot of companies. And I think having the policy in place as guidelines is truly helpful.
Yeah, I was just with a company the other day who shared their social media policy with me. And it was a very enlightened policy that basically treated people like adults and said,
yeah.
you know, use these things responsibly and just remember not to violate any confidentialities and,
exactly.
and you know, don't get into fights with people and make sure that you're transparent about what you're doing.
Right. Yes. And there are those rules of engagement. And some of it, believe it or not, it's just common sense. Don't talk about things that you're not an expert. You know, refer, if something comes to you that you're not qualified to talk about, then you would bring it to an expert so that they could talk about it. You know, if something came in an email, you wouldn't email back. If you weren't knowledgeable on the subject, you would refer it to somebody else in your company. So we've seen great progress.
Deirdre, thanks very much for being with us on the Middle Chamber Books podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. It was great talking to you, Steve.
We hope you enjoyed this program, and if you have comments or suggestions, you can email me with those comments, and the email address is steve@middlechamberbooks.com. You can also call our podcast comment line. In the U.S., it's 856-861-6146. Don't forget to put a plus one in front of it. In the U.K. and other parts of Europe, you can call plus 44-020-7193. 6146. And if you'd like to leave an audio comment, you can do so at those numbers and we'll use it in a future podcast. We produce these programs in the studios of Professional Podcasts in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, on the web at professionalpodcasts.com. For everyone here in the studios, this is Steve Lupatkin. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.